Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric Hultgren along with Ken Evans covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. And if you've missed us in the last 2 weeks, we get it, but we're back. And we have plenty of stuff to talk
about. We had Labor Day plans, Eric.
Plenty of stuff to talk about because, wow.
Well, first, I mean, as of the recording of this podcast, Eric, big congratulations going out to Daniel Cormier, who just as of minutes ago successfully defended his UFC light heavyweight championship. So come on, congratulations.
So I
that just happened.
I told you as right before we started that I found a tweet that I wanted to read in regards to the John Jones thing, and it's from Sean Alshadi at MMA Fighting, and 13 minutes ago he tweeted 2015 John Jones stripped of UFC light heavyweight title, 2016 John Jones strips of interim UFC light heavyweight title. 2017, John Jones stripped of UFC light heavyweight title.
There you go. There you go. This man does it every year.
Yep.
I want to talk about the dependability of this fighter when so many in the UFC have become undependable. We know every year right around this time, John Jones is going to fuck up.
Ray Borg, you need to pay attention. This is how it's done. You just got to be dependable and show up on time and then be loaded to the gills with whatever you want to take.
Okay, so for those who haven't been following along too closely at this point, we talked about this back when we were talking about the A sample. We're now through B sample, which was also positive, despite the fact that a blood test was negative. And everybody overreacted, by the way, to the blood test because that tests for different things.
Yeah, so yeah, let's reset for a second. Okay, so Turnabol is the thing that we're talking about that he tested positive for in the A sample of the urine test. Now, as Ken just said, the blood test and the urine test test for different things. So when they come out and say, oh, the night of the fight, his blood test was clean, that couldn't be a bigger red herring. It has nothing to do with what he was in trouble for. And just so that you know, when we're talking about A samples and B samples, and you may have heard this on UFC Tonight and a couple other places because a lot of fighters have been talking about this, the likelihood of the B sample being negative and the A sample being positive is next to none. And so this isn't much of a surprise. What is a surprise is that it now starts to, for me, Ken, open a whole bunch of questions about John Jones, because Turnabol, as you talked about 3 weeks ago when we were last on the show, is a steroid from the 1960s that you take because you're taking a whole bunch of other stuff. And so all day long as I've been thinking about this, I've been thinking to myself, like, so let's go back to the Matt Hamill fight. Is he juicing there? Is it from that moment on that he's juicing? Because it's from that moment on, and Ken, you've said this a couple times in the show, it's from that moment on you start to hear this mythology. Man, I didn't expect him to be that strong. Man, he was so strong. Man, I had no idea for his size how strong he was. Holy cow, he was really strong. Huh, I had no idea he was going to be that strong. Well, that's because he was pissing, I don't even know what, straight fire, really, at that point.
Yeah, he was like one of Danny's dragons, just shooting through the cups at that
he
point.
He was Drogon in the UFC until he got tested.
Here's the most interesting thing. You talked about this back right before John Jones got busted. If somebody wants to dig through the Podbean, Google Play, iTunes archives, I want to say it was 3 to 4 weeks before UFC 200. And we talked about the fact that it was interesting we were about to go into UFC 200 with this new USADA no-nonsense policy, essentially. Here's your penalty. There's no slipping around it. There's no Nevada Athletic Commission that's going to get to make the call. They're going to basically be bound by these rules. And you said this is going to change some cards. And we'll have to see. We could see some fighters that disappear. What we didn't think we'd see is a guy like John Jones entirely derail his career because of drug testing, which is what seems to have happened over the past couple of years. Yes, it was only 2 positive drug tests, but he also had those problems on the side. But you've got to look at it at this point. You know, I know Michael Bisping is saying John should be banned for life. I don't blame Bisping, by the way. I mean, we've done this on the show before. We'd have to dig through the notes. How many guys did Bisping fight through his career, and then at some point they just tested positive? A lot.
Well,
I mean, go pull up the Wikipedia. It's a lot of dudes.
It's half that, and then half he had to go through the crucible that was all the guys that were legally on TRE, you know?
Well, there was all the TRT guys, the TRE, the LMNOPs, everything, and Michael Bisping is a guy who was always on the precipice, too. So this is a guy who is understandably pissed off about guys who use drugs. Because think about all the money that he left on the table because he was that guy. I mean, man, we've been talking about Michael Bisping for a decade. He was always a fight or two away until he finally broke through. Well, a fight or two away is a big deal when other guys are cheating or on TRE. And when they go off of it, boom. All of a sudden, Michael Bisping, even though he's 8 years older than he was 10 years ago, is the best fighter he's been in his life and beaten everybody, including Anderson Silva, in the cage. I don't want to call in Anderson Silva at this point into question, but you have to understand when a guy like Michael Bisping says John Jones should be banned for life, he's coming from a place that you can have some sympathy and empathy for at this point. Now, the interesting thing is he's not going to get banned for life. But is a four-year ban essentially it at this point for somebody like John Jones?
Well, and my question that I wanted to ask you about that is, step two, guys, is a four-year ban, not a lifetime ban. I wanted to ask you two things, Ken, and I'll answer your question first, then I'll ask you the other two. Do I think it's enough? No, not at this point. I mean, when I'm looking at Al-Shadi's tweet, like, it starts to become, I mean, hindsight is always 20/20, but it starts to become clear that maybe from the jump off, this guy was doing stuff he probably shouldn't have done. And you may call it unfair of me to say that stuff, and you have every right to do that. However, given what he just got busted for, I can't help but question everything that came before it, because this is a thing, like we've talked about, when you get busted for it, like you call the dick pills, when you get busted for that, and it looks like it's estrogen blocking, which again is another tactic you'd use to mess around with this sort of stuff.
And I've never figured out how estrogen helps out your dick. Can somebody tell me that?
It doesn't. Right. It just helps hide from these tests, right?
Do we have a Caitlyn Jenner tweet that's going to talk about that? I don't know.
But so is it enough? I don't think so, because this feels like it's been going on for a long time and finally the wheels have unraveled. And in most cases, this doesn't happen. But USADA and WADA, I think, have sped up their science to catch up a little bit quicker than they had prior to some of the stuff at least happening in MMA. You're not seeing it as much in the NFL or the other places where it's soon probably going to hit.
Weird. You'd assume his brothers have some access to some high-level stuff that the NFL is not testing for. Or again, I mean, we don't want to go way too off on a tangent, but there's a lot of people who think the NFL, I mean, these guys are basically in car wrecks every week for our entertainment. You know, as much as they can turn a blind eye, they turn a blind eye.
And this is what I'm saying, right? Like, if the science is catching up to the sport science, it feels like they would be catching more in the NFL if that's what they were interested in doing, right? Where UFC has said, this is what we're interested in doing. Ramifications be damned, and there's some pretty massive ramifications. So is 4 years enough? Not in my opinion, but I don't
really
know. Well, I think
4 years is a good hit at this point, especially his age. Again, I'm not saying at all what he did is excusable or am I justifying it, but I do feel like we're commiserate with the crime at this point. If you're going to be stupid enough to do something again, yeah, you're going to get 4 years, and you're going to get 4 years at the point you're about to turn 30. And you know what? We're going to see John again. I don't know if it'll be in the UFC, if it'll be in Bellator or somewhere else. We'll see him, but where the hell is he going to be in his career? Because we talked about on this show, on this podcast, about the fact that people are just catching up very quickly. And the fact that OSP fight was as tough as it was for John Jones. And the fact that, you know, John Jones in 4 years, no, he's not going to be fighting Daniel Cormier. He's the guy that really got, let's talk about it, dicked in all of this. All the dick pills, you know, Daniel Cormier got dicked in all this because a guy was cheating, but a friend of ours tweeted out today, losses can be overturned, but knockouts can't. And we're going to remember the fact that he got knocked out, even though the guy was cheating and even though the loss was overturned. And, you know, here's the thing. Daniel Cormier is 38 years old. Other than that one dude, he's had a Hall of Fame and possibly legend of the sport career. But he's never going to get over these two losses. And they've been to a guy who's been cheating and a guy who might have cheated the first time and definitely cheated the second time. And that really sucks for Daniel Cormier. And that's why we haven't heard a lot from Daniel Cormier at this point.
Well, because I don't know. I don't know how you come back from that, right? Because you were doing really well until things went really wrong. And you can't undo that stuff. And those that video is going to be in the archives forever, even though the facts have changed dramatically. And the unfortunate part about this whole thing is that night, and you and I talked about it afterwards, and I want to say you even said, let's hope he tests clean because that would ruin this whole thing. But like, that story coming out of 214 of redemption for John Jones, we all of us thinking he was the best of all time. No one could beat him. And it turns out no one could beat him because he beat Daniel Cormier with a thing that most of us saw coming with that lean into the right and into the head kick. And that's exactly what happened to set up the actual KO. And what an amazing story that would be. A guy who turned everything around and came back to be the best that he was and then goes on to have this crazy career. And you and I lost our mind at the possibility of him fighting Brock Lesnar. When the A sample came out 3 weeks ago, I teased that the only way that that happens is in the WWE. And it turns out I might not be teasing at this point because a 4-year suspension, that's where he might end up.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine that? Well, Ronda just showed up.
Right. Well, and I think that'll be great for Ronda because, you know, no one will hurt her feelings by fake losing to her. So,
ouch. Okay.
So to me, like, I just don't know how, if you're Daniel Cormier, how you get over that because of what that one loss means. That one loss keeps you out of the pound for pound list, even though it's a no contest. That one loss then has a whole bunch of questions about that first loss. And then you spend the rest of your life with this ghost in your house that you can never get rid of. Never.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting too, because who's Daniel going to fight next? I don't encourage Daniel Cormier to retire, but it almost feels like that's what he should do at this point, because I think he was probably going to retire or come close to it if he beat John. I mean, the guy's 38. There's going to be that drop off. And for fighters, it's a cliff, ladies and gentlemen. It is not a slope. It is not a wheelchair ramp. It is not, you know, it's not OSHA approved going down this ramp. It is a drop. And he's right at the edge where he's going to drop. So he could take another fight, boom, and lose the legacy he's had left. But the guy is going to take a fight. I don't even know at this point who we're going to see him take on. You know, I'd love to see him maybe jump to heavyweight at this point. But then you're going to vacant out a title that you were just handed back. I mean, it's such a mess. And this is why I said weeks ago after the fight, I go, I hope everything's good with this fight. Because if it's not, oh, my God, look at the mess that's going to happen. And we're in the middle of that mess right now. None of it Daniel Cormier is doing. But I would argue he almost feels as many effects at this point as John Jones, other than the loss of paycheck and sponsors and things of that nature.
I mean, so you've got Gustafsson, Odzemir, Glover, which he shouldn't fight, Manoa, which he shouldn't fight, and Shogun, which he shouldn't fight. So it's Odzemir, I guess. But to your point, is there any money in that? And would he make more money jumping and fighting Lewis, Hunt, Nagano, Velasquez, Verdum, or Overeem, right? I know he's not going to fight Kane, but my point being, those five names are much bigger paydays than whatever the hell's happening in light heavyweight.
You forgot the sixth name in there for a guy like Daniel Cormier. You know he would love the fight. You know he would love the fight.
Who, Brock?
Who's the sixth name? Yes, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a big, huge wrestling fan. He's a big, huge Brock fan. He would love to take Brock on, and wow, what do we have? You have a 39-year-old guy taking on a 42-year-old guy at that point.
When you already know he's on the juice, so you know that going in, so you won't be sad about it, right?
So regardless of the situation, we would pay everything to see that. That's the money fight. We talked about the fact that John jumping to heavyweight against Brock's the money fight. Daniel Cormier, look, can say thank you, no thank you to the light heavyweight title. It's time for me to hang it up at light heavyweight. UFC can try to do something with those four guys you talked about. Let's put them in a pseudo tournament, make something happen and see what happens. But I don't see, out of all those guys you mentioned, the one guy I'm going to pay to see Daniel Cormier fight is Brock Lesnar at this point. That's the guy I will definitely hand my money out
for. You would pay for Stipe though, right?
I just think he'd get mauled by Stipe.
I don't disagree with that. But
I don't think he's going to necessarily get mauled by Brock Lesnar. That's going to be a competitive, interesting fight between a guy who's never stopped fighting in 10 years and a guy who's obviously been in and out because of health issues and other things. So I wouldn't be against a DC Stipe fight, but you've got an interesting qualification for that if you're the UFC. Because, again, he didn't lose, but we saw him lose, Eric.
Yeah, and man, I don't.
You can't undo it. You just can't undo it.
You can't undo it. And like going back to that night and just seeing how emotionally drained he was from that happening, I just, when the A sample came out, I felt horrific. And today when the B sample showed up, or last night when the B sample showed up, I should say, like, I was beside myself thinking, like, what is this guy, what's going through his head right now, right?
And at this point, they just sent him back his belt. Like, FedEx went, hey, here's your belt back. Congrats, champ. Like, how do you feel as a fighter when that happens?
Right? Like, yeah.
What do you do with that? I mean, this is unprecedented, really, in the UFC, this type of situation.
It's just, it's crazy. So to kind of put a bow around this, for those of you wondering what is next, Jones has to go to arbitration where he can get, the 4-year suspension that supposedly is going to happen October 17th, although they can push that up if the parties can, agree on doing that. So it could happen sooner than later. If they push it up, my guess would be somebody in the John camp thinks that they have a story to tell that can get this thing lowered. But he's going to get something, no doubt.
I mean, I don't know what story they can tell with two samples at this point.
I'm with you, but wouldn't you agree if they push it up 3 weeks, that means they've got something?
Well, they had something last time. They told the dick pill story, and they still got the year.
Right.
I mean, you know, cool. You pay your guys to do it, and these guys are probably looking at the gravy train leaving the station and trying to get what they can while it's heading out and going, okay, yeah, John, we got an argument for you. Let's get in front of the NAC. Whatever happens, it doesn't matter when it happens. The one thing that they do is always backdate essentially to the violation as long as you're back in the testing pool. So, I mean, he's always going to backdate to the violation as long as he jumps back into the testing pool in what is now going to be 2021.
Wow.
Isn't that insane to talk about that?
It's crazy.
As long as he jumps, he'll probably have to be back into the testing pool 2020 at some point. But that's how far we're looking now for John Jones, who was arguably the greatest fighter of all time for a very short period. He was very dominant, but it was a very short period, and it certainly was full of ups and a lot of downs at this point. And it's kind of interesting to think about the fact that, you know, that B sample might have just set him back his entire career. And he's basically, his options are going to be sort of what Chael Sonnen does. And Chael just goes and gets some fights, and he gets money fights, and certainly people are going to be interested. Now, maybe John will be the aberration. Maybe at 33, John will be still a better fighter than most of the division. But we talked a lot about people catching up. Who's number two in the division now? Came out of nowhere.
Odzemir.
We didn't know how to pronounce his name, and I forgot his name, by the way, back before that pay-per-view. I mean, these guys are coming out of nowhere, and they're coming fast. And just look what happened to Tiger Woods, ladies and gentlemen. That guy was supposed to be at his 25th major at this point, and he got stuck. And he could not overcome the tidal wave of new talent that had watched him growing up and decided, oh, okay, I got to be that good to do this job. I got to be able to do this to do that job. It happens in every industry, every career, and every sport. And they get better, and they get better, and they get better. And right now, John Jones is essentially going to have fought 3 times in 7 years if he's laid out with a 4-year suspension here, which seems very, very likely.
Well, and some context added on top of that. So when John Jones won the title the first time, he was the youngest UFC champion ever. Odzemir's nickname is No Time because he's currently on the trajectory to beat that record.
And he looks like a guy who might, if you're going to set up the next fight, that's the guy that Cormier hasn't fought yet.
Yeah.
I mean, that dude looked impressive. We better figure out how to pronounce this dude's name. We sort of made fun of it last podcast, but this guy's for real. Yeah. And that guy in 4 years will probably be obsolete, let alone John Jones working his way back into the cage if he can. I mean, here's the other thing. When people have issues like John Jones has, when people have substance problems, anger issues, partying issues, whatever you've got, downtime is the worst thing in the world for those type of people. John's got a lot of money still. John runs around in a lot of circles, I'm sure. 4 years without quote-unquote something to do is not going to treat John Jones very well, in my estimation. I don't think that's going to go well for him.
No, not at all. Not at all. All right, so a couple other...
We're not going to see a John Jones that basically Here's my analogy, and then I'll let you jump through. Yeah. Sorry, Eric. We're not going to see a John Jones that went to prison and got to work out every day and come out in 4 years. Like, I've been working out for 4 years.
Yeah, no, that's not what you're going to see.
That's not what we're going to. I don't. If we see a John Jones that trained for 4 years straight, sure, he can come back in. Sure, he can make an impact. Sure, he could contend again for the UFC title, whatever division he wants, heavyweight, light heavyweight. I just have a lot of issues believing he's going to get through these next 4 years unscathed. And God bless him if he's able to. And my best wishes to him. I don't wish ill on anybody, but I just see John having a tough, tough time these next 4 years, regardless of how these things go.
So there you have it. We will keep you posted as the arbitration comes to fruition. If that happens earlier than October 17th, we will let you know. But as of now, that's when that's booked. This past weekend, you had UFC 215, or as Ken and I were calling it, you can't possibly want me to pay for this. It kind of lived up to the hype, right? Amanda Nunes and Shevchenko, a split decision win for Amanda Nunes. Shevchenko going crazy on the judges, going crazy in the ring. It was not a very inspired fight. She dislocated her finger in the first round, which is why she says she didn't win the first round, and then she says she won everything after that. And I said on Twitter after this happened, like, to your point, what you were just talking about a minute ago, when you think about when Ronda Rousey was absolutely red hot, this division was so interesting. People could not get enough of it. And on Saturday night, you learned, like, this is a division you could forget about in a week. Like, there is no reason to pay attention to this division right now if this is the best they're going to trot out. And I'm not going to blame either one of them for being put into the main event spot because Ray Borg couldn't make it. I am, however, going to say that it's your job to put on a fight that makes people want to be a fan of yours. And I'm not the, because I know that there was some really, 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 really terrible reffing, so I'm not that guy. I am not the go out on your shield guy, but I am the guy who knows that there's a fair amount of entertainment that goes into this sport. And if you're not willing to make your fight entertaining in whatever definition that means for you, then you get what's coming to you, and that is that people do not want to pay to see you fight. And that is a bad spot to be for these two ladies.
Well, it's a bad spot to be in if I find Conor McGregor on a jet ski on Instagram more entertaining than I find your fight. And that's what we walked into on Saturday night. And we walked into it, too. Think about Amanda Nunes. We were talking about she's the next coming. There's nobody who's going to touch her. There's nobody who's going to be even close. Then she had her tummy ache, whatever was happening before, and she had to pull out. And then she had this very lackluster fight. And, you know, I'm watching. I didn't watch the fight live. I watched it afterwards. And I watched the fight knowing what was happening with the judging and going, so wait, are takedowns now the Democratic superdelegates of MMA fighting? Because that's the only look, as much as I thought it wasn't a dominating performance by either fighter, I thought Shevchenko won that fight fairly clearly, lost a couple of takedowns. And that seemed to be what turned the fight. And again, if somebody takes you down, you got to stop them from taking you down. I've said that a lot of times when we've been watching fights. But there wasn't a lot done with the takedowns that seemed to have scored the fight for Nunes. And it wasn't very interesting. You've shuttled these fighters in this division until something else comes along onto Fox Sports. Or maybe Big Fox if they're lucky, because you're going to have a hard time getting people to fork out cash. And it speaks again to the personalities and how much they mean to the UFC. And yeah, was Ronda Rousey the best female fighter in the world? For a long time, some people thought so. You know, I was a little skeptical here and there, but I mean, she kept winning, so sometimes it's hard to pick against somebody who keeps doing that. I was skeptical about Conor for the longest time. I was very skeptical about Conor. I thought when he finally fought a wrestler, he was just going to go down and that was going to be it. And it was going to be done. I think I came in the Monday after the fight and I said, okay, I'm in on Conor. When Conor finally won the belt. And he did it against a wrestler, and I think it was Chad Mendes who had stepped in at that point, if I remember correctly. Ronda, it was hard to pick against her because she kept winning and winning and winning. And with that winning, there was some star power, and she had something there that connected with the fans. And the only other person who's come close is Miesha Tate, and Miesha Tate decided to retire. She doesn't need this, and she wasn't able to get Ronda back in the cage. I think that's a bigger fight at this point than any other fight you'd have in that division would be Miesha Ronda again. And I know it sounds ridiculous after they fought a couple times, but people want to see what real Ronda is. And do I think she should be fighting for a championship? No, but I'm certainly not that impressed at this point with Amanda Nunes, and I really thought I would be a lot more at this point, Eric.
Yeah, and you know, I when she won, I thought to myself, this will be amazing because you'll have Joanna Jędrzejczyk being dominant in her division and Amanda being dominant in this division. And it, to your point, her three takedowns somehow, you know, you'd say it's super delegate. I'll use a video game term, like 10x'd her superpower, right? So she was able to just kind of get extra points that didn't exist on the judges' scorecards in order to walk away with that split decision. But much like you and I talked about when the McGregor-Mayweather fight was going on, that I forget which fight it was on the undercard, but at one point, the three guys analyzing the fight go, I don't know how to score that round when there's about 6 million people who haven't watched a boxing match in a decade. You can't say things out loud like, I don't know how to score that round. Same thing with this. When you have people spend $60 to see this fight, they have to understand what's happening. And if Shevchenko's right, and obviously you and I were not in the locker room, but if in the locker room they tell you that takedowns that do nothing don't count as points, then takedowns that do nothing, even if you do 28 of them in a row, shouldn't garner
or
you any...
Or lay down for 2.5 minutes.
Shouldn't garner you any points. Because it's not to her to her credit, right? And I thought the way she's handled this is kind of terrible too. But she does have some points. The sport is not hold the center of the ring. The sport is not hold your opponent down on the mat. It's none of those things. And unfortunately, that's why they continue to tell you not to leave it in the hand of the judges, because they are 10 times out of 10 going to mess it up. And dear God, if you're in New York, may the Lord have mercy on you, because they don't know what they're watching. And I just don't know at this point. I think you're dead on. Like, this has to be Fox Sports 1 or wherever they want to put it, but it can't be here. And, you know, the main event is in a similar situation. They just rebooked it today. They're going to let Ray Borg have another shot at UFC 216. Now, if that fight doesn't come to fruition, no one will care, because there's enough stuff on that card that people will be super excited. But,
yeah, but I mean, there is, and look, I love that main event, but I'm still not, again, at the risk of the guy never talking to either of us again, I'm still not sure about Kevin Lee main event at this point. And I get that that's where the rankings are and everything should land, but I mean, and I love Tony Ferguson too. I love both of those dudes, but I mean, now you've got that fight and the DJ fight, guy who's never really drawn dollars. Cool. 216 looks pretty cool. Does it look $60 cool, Eric?
No, but they don't have anything that looks $60 cool until you get to GSP Bisping.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's just an interesting dynamic we've got with the UFC right now. And you know, I'm glad that the DJ Ray Borg fight is back on. I'm kind of wondering what is going on, though. We haven't gotten a real good story about what happened with Ray Borg, have we?
No, I mean, you and I were talking before this started. The story that I had read is the one that you had read, that one of his teammates were like, I don't know why he didn't fight. He should have fought. And his nutritionist was the one, and he has since stopped working with this nutritionist, but was the one who kind of got with the UFC doctors and made the definitive decision, is my understanding.
Oh, it was Cowboy Cerrone, actually.
Oh, was
it? That's a guy who's always going to bring it. And we talked a little bit off the air about this right before the show, and we should probably bring it onto the podcast. You know, these things happen in these cards, and it just seems like it's happening more and more. And I don't want to blame a guy for who's sick or injured or saying that, you know, there's something wrong and he shouldn't fight. But it seems more and more often. And this happened with John Jones a couple of years ago. We talked about John Jones earlier. Charles Sonnen offered to step in and save a UFC card, and John Jones said no. And it seems more and more often these guys want a perfect situation to walk into and are willing to dismantle a card. And again, I'm not trying to earn my living fighting. I'm not the one that has to go in that cage and do what these guys do. But when you hear somebody like Cowboy Cerrone say, yeah, that guy should have walked into the cage and took the fight and took his title opportunity, you got to wonder if it's not a situation where, okay, maybe he should have gone in there after his title opportunity. Again, these guys seem to have enough leverage, though, because he just got rebooked for the next pay-per-view. So regardless of what Donald Cerrone thinks or what you and I think, he's back in there. But it doesn't feel like this would have happened with GSP. Doesn't feel like this would have happened with Anderson Silva. Let's go back to Tito Ortiz or Chuck Liddell or Randy Couture. And that was a consistency that I don't think the UFC entirely appreciated at that point in their history. Because these guys would come to fight, hell or high water. The reason, ladies and gentlemen, Conor McGregor just fought for $100 million a few weeks ago is because he would always fight. He didn't care how much you weighed. He didn't care who you were. He didn't care if he was a 10-1 underdog. He's going to show up. He's going to lace up the big gloves or the small gloves, and he's going to fight. Do you think if Conor McGregor had a tummy ache the week of the Mayweather fight, he would have fought?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was going to get in that cage. Excuse me. He was going to get in that boxing ring, and he was going to fight. And you, when he had that title shot in the UFC, do you think a tummy ache would have stopped? And again, I don't want to belittle what happened, but I do want to say, you know, these guys, it seems like a lot of guys piss and moan about what happened to Conor McGregor. And by that, I mean, he's getting all this attention. He's getting all this money, this, that, and the other thing. The guy hasn't stopped fighting. He's never turned down a fight. He really has never turned down a fight, and he keeps going in there and doing the same thing over and over again, which for the most part has been winning. At a minimum, he does what he did in the Mayweather fight, for Christ's sake. He lasted 10 rounds with the best boxer in history, arguably. You know, he went in there against Nate Diaz, was outweighed, and went in there and fought the guy and lost that first time, and then refused to fight anybody else. I mean, this is fighting. This is a sport, but this is also fighting. That is the type of spirit we look at. When a guy like Donald Cerrone's on the card, you tell me he's on the card, cool, I'm in.
Yep.
I don't know who's fighting.
Robbie Lawler's the same way,
Robbie
right?
Robbie Lawler, perfect example right there. Either of the Diaz brothers, another great example right there. You know, these guys are on the card, cool, you got me. That's what happens when you keep fighting and you quote-unquote step up. And it just feels like on occasion... Again, this is from a non-fighter's perspective, and you know, you can go on Twitter and tell me that I'm an asshole and I'm not taking into account this the fighter's health. Non-fighter's perspective, on occasion, these guys don't seem to understand that, and then cards get dismantled, and then people are like, oh, why? What did I do? Why don't you like me? I don't know. But if Ray Borg's booked on the next card, can you blame him, Eric?
No, and to what you were just saying, you know, there are different situations where I think you've got to look at why the fighter is not in the fight differently. For example, Thiago Alves, if you missed it, he is out of Pittsburgh this weekend because he stayed with his family during Irma, right? That to me is much different than having a tummy ache on fight week and not making it to the fight. That said, I don't disagree. You're seeing more and more. I mean, this will be this weekend alone. This will be what? Six fights in seven events that have been pulled the week of the event.
And decent sized fights, yeah. Too. Not like, not lower on the card, not no. FS1, not fight pass stuff we wouldn't really notice. I mean, the Ray Borg thing, that dismantled the top of a card a little bit. And again, we know this DJ card wasn't going to be that huge. But I mean, they're putting on a card. People have spent a lot of money on these tickets. I mean, you and I don't know. I was going to say we talked about this. I actually don't think we talked about this, but I think it was understood. You probably have no interest in going to Detroit, do you?
No.
I have not even asked you because it was almost understood, like the trip. And we're not far from there. We're a couple hours down the road. Let's just see what happens. Maybe get a press credential. If not, we'll watch it at home on pay-per-view because God knows what fight they're going to try to book and God knows what fight might actually happen. Because that was supposed to be all the rumors say what? John Jones Stipe.
Yes.
They were going to pull the trigger on that for Detroit, which would have been kind of cool, but that got obliterated, obviously, and God knows what's next for that card. So it's easier for you and I to grab a six-pack of nice beer and sit in your living room or my living room and decide the night of whether or not we want to watch it, because then we'll know what the freaking card is at that point. And that's what's happening. They're trying to sell tickets that cost hundreds of dollars, Eric. And these fighters are now just kind of, it feels like they're shuffling in and out as if there's some backup. There's not a back. This isn't the MLB. There's not a backup shortstop that can sit in your place on a Thursday day game until you're rested up until next week. This is fighting. Do you think there's any chance in hell we won't see Canelo Alvarez or Gennady Golovkin on Saturday night? Any chance in hell? As of the recording of this podcast, it's Wednesday night, so we've got 2 days to go. Any chance in hell we won't see one of those two fighters on Saturday?
No. There's no
zero.
Chance.
Zero.
Zero chance.
I just put up 2 zeros, so that might have looked like an eight. I meant zero. So I be, and those guys get it. They get to be on a big pay-per-view once or twice a year at best in boxing, and they take advantage of it. And the guy who's taking advantage of it best in UFC is who at this point, Eric?
It's without a doubt Conor McGregor.
Conor McGregor! So these guys have to look at the model, and when they piss and moan about the Reebok deal and how he's got a side deal and he gets to go box and how he gets to go do 10 other things, the guy shows up. And I'm not taking anything. Screw that. I'm not going to apologize for their opinion anymore. They need to show up if they want to be the next Conor McGregor. It's really that simple. Would you say I'm kind of a cynical guy after knowing me for 20 years?
I will call you pragmatic. Let's go with that.
Okay, so I'm pragmatic. Was I on the Conor McGregor hype train a couple years back?
No, it was just me by myself on my.
It was you by yourself
on my Irish hype train.
But you know what the guy did? Kept fighting. Kept fighting, kept doing what he was going to say, kept fighting, lost one time, but dude, fought at 170, kept fighting, wouldn't fight another dude, decided to go box, kept fighting, won championships, won another championship. At a certain point, a cynical slash pragmatic guy like myself can't even deny, okay, I'm on board. You go get me my Notorious t-shirt out of the closet, let me run up and down the street while I'm playing Dropkick Murphys. I am all in at this point because the guy just kept showing up. And just kept fighting. It really is that simple. I mean, what's the saying? You're really into the sayings. What is it? 90% is showing up, Eric?
Yes, 90. Yes,
90% of the job is showing up.
90% is showing up.
We're not seeing 90% of the job get done a lot of times in the UFC the past couple weeks.
No, and you're not seeing guys take the difficult fights. Like you said, they're waiting for these perfect moments. To go back to how we even got in this insanity, and I won't spend a whole bunch of time talking about this, but. How we got to Mighty Mouse Ray Borg is that Mighty Mouse didn't want to fight TJ Dillashaw.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like,
which would have been a big fight.
Yep.
And again, I don't blame him for not taking that fight, but that would have been a big fight and would have been something we would have thought about paying for.
But I would say I do blame him for not taking that fight. And here's why. Like, I get that you want to, like, this goes back to what you're talking about with why people are into Conor McGregor is he clearly has a plan. And some people hate Conor McGregor because of this plan. And part of that plan includes, and this is why they hate him, is that he doesn't really defend the belts that he wins because he's got another thing to do. It has nothing. He doesn't have an interest in defending the lightweight belt or the featherweight belt or any of that stuff. He has an interest in what's the next thing you think he can't do, which some people really like myself, like yourself, and it drives some other people crazy. You're Demetrius Johnson, and clearly your thing that you want to do is beat Anderson Silva's title defense record. And I get it. Except for the fact, in your current division, there isn't anybody within a light year of being able to touch you. I mean, for the love of God, Henry Cejudo fought this past weekend and beat the guy that you beat in two rounds and thought he should get a title fight. Now, if you rewind the clock back to when DJ fought Wilson Reyes, Reyes would throw two punches and DJ would punch him 17 times, and that's not an exaggeration. Right? Like, he's just on a different level. And so to me, if you're a true martial artist and you're somebody who wants to get the big bucks and you're somebody who wants to follow this Conor McGregor timeline, Dillashaw is the fight. Ray Borg is not the fight.
Oh, for sure. And let's go back to what we started the show with, John Jones. Let's not forget John Jones, who later in his career blew up a UFC pay-per-view for not wanting to take a fight. How did he win that title? Rashad Evans was injured and Rampage Jackson turned down the shot against, who was it, Shogun Hua?
Shogun, yep.
He won the fight and the title on short notice. That was one of the big explosions for John Jones. Of course, winning the title is going to be a big deal. Dude stepped in when another guy didn't want to. I mean, at that point, remember Quentin Jackson, Rampage, back in 2010, 2011, whenever that fight happened. I mean, and not that he's not a legit fighter right now, but he was certainly at the point where, like, okay, we get that. He's going to step in against Hua. They probably fought in Pride 10 times for all I know at this point. That's how Pride meshes together. He didn't want the fight on 4 weeks' notice. And John Jones said, hell yeah, I'm going to take a title fight on 4 weeks' notice. Went in and dismantled Shogun. And that was where his star took off. I mean, if these fighters look at Conor McGregor and John Jones and the way things take off and the way guys are popular, I mean, let's go back to that card. I think Uriah Faber was on that card. That was one of his first UFC cards. People love Faber. Now, Faber was never a super dominant fighter. He was always a great championship fighter. Never super dominant, but what did he never do? He never missed a fight. And he was always on a card like every 3.5 months, it felt like. Like that dude was there all the damn time between WEC and UFC. That's what a lot of these fighters, I think, need a little bit more of nowadays. I want to, if you're not in the championship picture, goddamn, you should be fighting 4 to 5 times a year. Figure your camp schedule out and be in that cage and be fighting, because that's how you're going to get noticed. Because you and I are watching cards, Eric, and if we're watching a card and it's 10-23, we go, oh, shit, didn't we see this guy like 3 or 4 times already? Oh, yeah, remember he did that head kick thing, like 2 things. That's where we start to notice guys. That's where they need to make their mark. I think a guy who's really done well with that, I'll give him some credit here, so maybe he'll talk to the show again, Kevin Lee, just keeps taking fights. I mean, he lost against Al Iaquinta in a fight that everybody thought he should have won, that he was going to be the next prodigal son. He took that loss like a champ, and he basically showed up and just kept fighting, and now that's an interim title, correct?
Or is that going to be the title? I mean, it'll eventually, I think, be the title, but right now it's an interim
title. But that'll be a great fight for Conor. I mean, regardless, Kevin Lee's been one of the dudes who's done that thing, and it seems like he's one of the few guys who's done that thing in recent UFC history at this point.
Absolutely. And for those of you in the MMA trivia world, Shogun and Rampage fought one time in 2005 at Total Elimination, and he lost to Shogun.
You sure it wasn't 10 times?
I feel
like everything in Pride happened 10 times.
And he lost via soccer
kicks. And every time Bob Sapp ran it at the end, but he blew out before he could get through the ropes and just had to suck some wind.
Yes. All right.
Bob Sapp sucking wind, my favorite part of Pride, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, before
I will pay $79.95 for that every night of the week.
Deal. But you can just spend $9.99 for Fight Pass and watch them whenever you want to.
Are you on the dime now? I'm just trying to give Bob Sapp a little love.
Whenever
here.
Fight Pass decides to work. All right.
No, let's not even start.
This weekend you've got.
Look, let me just say.
Okay.
Let me just say, because I know Fight Pass caught a lot of crap
as they
for Mayweather McGregor. Caught a lot of crap for Mayweather McGregor. Immediately gave refunds, no questions asked. And the interesting part of this whole deal was, I didn't realize this until you were at my house and the night of, we were talking about it. They were essentially carrying the entire streaming load. Can a company like Showtime, managed by NBC, not get their ass on the ball and be able to stream the fights? Yeah, we could stream Showtime if I would have pulled my laptop out. How fun would that party have been, Eric? If I would have set my laptop in the middle of my living room with all of us in the living room staring at the laptop. Oh, I'm sorry, hold on. Does anybody have an HDMI cable I can run to the TV? I hope it's not HDMI protected because it is a pay-per-view. Like, I actually give Fight Pass a little bit of credit here. They were trying to carry basically the entire load of streaming services that were actually available to use on televisions as streaming services. Sure, if you wanted to watch it in like a small computer window or some other bull crap, it was easy to kind of get another stream. But it seemed like Fight Pass was the only way, and they got a little bit overwhelmed the night of the fight. And they actually fired the entire team. I don't know if that was necessary. Fired the entire team and company that was involved with that, which you and I have called for a lot. Like, why don't we have enough of this in our industries of entertainment and marketing and reaching consumers? Like, every once in a while, if you screw up that big, hey, there's going to be we could have knocked down like 2 million fights on our service if you guys wouldn't have screwed up. So guess what? You're all fired, because you know what? That's like $200 million, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, and I would say that in that particular instance, that's how that should go down. I understand that they were carrying the bulk of the load, but as I was telling you on Saturday night, they were the only one advertising it, and you couldn't get the pay-per-view on YouTube. To your point, Showtime is so, you know, walled off garden, it's impossible to put it anywhere. So unless you're actually a subscriber, there was really very little way that you could get this thing if you were a cord cutter other than Fight Pass. Now, that said, the week prior, they had done 1.1 million pay-per-view buys, right? So they clearly know how to handle that server load. The job of that team is to understand, like the rest of us knew, that if we're going to top out at 7 million, you better have bandwidth to hold 10 million just in case.
Right. And I get that. But I mean,
so you're fired.
Fired everybody. Yes. If you ever cost a company $200 million, you should be fired.
Yep.
And if you can't mute your goddamn phone during a conference call, you should be fired. You and I think, can end the show agreeing on that, can't
yes.
we?
Yes, we can. All right, one more thing.
Who's on that line? Burp, burp, burp. I swear swear to God, if we get another one of those calls,
one more.
Swear to God.
One more thing before we leave. This weekend, you get UFC Fight Night in Pittsburgh, Rockhold and David Branch, which should be fun. As I said, Thiago Alves is off the co-main event versus Mike Perry. Alex Reyes taking the fight on 3 days' notice. Hector Lombard taking on Anthony Smith, and the card goes down from there. So some fun free fights. And in some ways, this could be a really great day to fill some time watching fights. But to your point, there isn't much on the horizon with a lot of implications. This fight has zero implications because the middleweight title contender has the interim strap right now and is injured, and the middleweight title champion is fighting George St. Pierre. So this has no really ramifications at all for either man if they win, which makes it hard to be vested on Saturday night. That said, if you're looking for MMA, it is free on Fox Sports 1, kicking off at 10 p.m. Eastern time because we're in Pittsburgh.
Well, it seems exactly like a card Pittsburgh deserves because, ladies and gentlemen, let's not forget the great Bret Hart, the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be, once said, if you were going to give the United States of America an enema, you'd stick the hose right in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And on that note, for all our friends in Pittsburgh, have a wonderful time. I am Eric Hulkran. That is Ken Evans. This is Way of the Warrior. It is your MMA show.